I wanted to add that if you cannot have access electronically to all of the references, then I believe that we do have about 40 copies of all of the references available that can be found at Archdeacons. Finally, and importantly, on behalf of the board of the SNC, we believe it is our honour, our privilege, and indeed our duty to support Rabbi Dweck in his teaching of Torah. Thank you. He not only does this with and for our own S&P Kahal, the oldest Jewish community in this country, and why not say that we would be delighted to have and welcome all of you to any of our synagogues. Come and experience our unique minhag, please. You would be most welcome. But importantly, we see it as our duty that we support our senior rabbi in teaching and sharing his Torah with many other communities. And teaching is one thing, but learning is quite another. When we are taught by one, if I may say so, Rabbi, as blessed as Rabbi Dweck, as capable as he is of inspiring, motivating, and stimulating thought, then that is when we learn the most. And so, a heartfelt thought. I hope we all come here together tonight in the spirit of learning with open hearts and open minds. And it is in this spirit, then, that I take great pleasure in introducing the senior rabbi of the S&P and the presenter of this lecture series on the teachings of the Rambam. Rabbis, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Rabbi Joseph Dweck.
Thank you. Wow. Good evening. How's everybody doing? Good to see you again. I want to open first with a bit of thanks. First of all, I want to thank the Sephardi Center for underwriting this part of the series that will be held here at the LSJS. I'm very proud to be able to do this at the LSJS. Since I've arrived in London, it is an institution that I hold very close and dear to my heart, and it's an honor to serve as a deputy president. It's an honor to call its dean, Rabbi Dr. Rafi Zarum, a good friend. He is a mentor to me. He's somebody that I look to for advice and guidance and to hear wisdom from, and I very much appreciate Rafi opening up the LSJS for us to be able to hold our shiur here tonight and for the coming weeks. Thank you, Caroline, for your beautiful words and for your service to the S&P Sephardi community, to you and to the entire board. I am very grateful for your support and for your strength and your partnership in teaching Torah. Because at the end of the day, that's what's going on. I mean, at the end of the day, that's what we're doing. Are we okay with sound and all of that? Everybody's hearing? And if I move around, are we okay? Because I don't like to keep. I'd like to talk to you too, right? Oh, be nice. Be nice. I'll come to there. So I have to move around a bit, right? But you can hear me, yes? If I move around a bit. Yeah? All right. So our social contract tonight is 1 hour. That is the shiur. There will be 15 minutes after that where I will open up for questions. But we're going to try and keep it to a strict 15 minutes because we could be here all night, and although I'd love to, I really would. I don't know that everybody else would. So, you know, and then there's getting up and then everybody and so on. So what I'd like to do is begin with why. Why are we doing Hilchot Deot, right? In case you didn't know, we're doing Hilchot Deot. And what that means is this. Basically, we're going to explore that tonight. But we're going to be studying the Rambam. We're going to be studying Maimonides, big surprise. But we're going to be studying a set of halachot, of Jewish law, that he expresses in his book, the Mishneh Torah. In this book, the Mishneh Torah, is essentially the Rambam's entire compilation of the mitzvot of the Torah. He counts through the mitzvot of the Torah more than once. And what he does in this book, the Mishneh Torah, which is what he calls it, incidentally, it is not called the Yad HaHazakah. People refer to it as the Yad HaHazakah. We do call it the Yad HaHazakah, but when I say it's not called that, he didn't call it that. He never referred to it as the Yad HaHazakah, which literally means the strength, the powerful hand. And the reason why people call it that is because Yad, the word Yad is 14 in Gematria, and there are 14 books in the Mishneh Torah. The Rambam never called it that. He called it Mishneh Torah. He writes this in his introduction. Mishneh Torah means a review of Torah. And essentially that's what it is. He goes through the entire 613 mitzvot of the Torah and details them as they were expressed in the Talmud, and goes through Torah, Hachamim, the rabbis, and brings it down to even minhag and custom that has spread throughout all of Israel, and he puts it in the most uncanny, uncanny order. And when I say uncanny, I mean it's just brilliant order. I mean, you read through what I've been doing lately. Have you been reading any of the weekly essays on the Talmud that I've been writing? Anybody seen any of that? Yeah? You should. Sure. So what I've been doing is I've been reading through the Talmud and studying the Rambam on the daf, on the page. Because what the Rambam does is he'll take from the page whatever elements of Jewish law come out of the page, right? So there's discussions in the Talmud, they're discussing, and there'll be a line of law, which is not easy to detect all the time because there's different opinions, and you want to know which opinion am I supposed to... And you follow the Rambam, and you realize what this man did. No computers. He didn't have like 7 computer screens on his desk, which he was dealing to put things together. And you see what he does. He takes one line and puts it over here in this book, in this place, in this chapter. Another line, puts it over here in that book, in this place, in this chapter. And all beautifully ordered. So what he did was, he actually says in his introduction, if you want to know the whole Torah, just study my book. You can read the written Torah and my book and you've got it all. You can read other things, you know, you can study other things, but if you want to have the whole thing down in your hand, I've got you covered, right? One of the things that he does is he opens up with foundations. He asks, what are the underpinnings? What are the foundations upon which our whole religious life, thought, philosophy is built upon? And he opens with those ideas. The first thing that he speaks about, God. Everything is built on God, from God, comes from God. But then after he deals with the foundations, he moves to the next issue. And that is what we're going to be focusing on in these classes. We will begin at the LSJS, but please God, we will continue this series throughout the year. And we're going to take time. We're going to take time to read through the Rambam's teachings on what he calls Hilchot Deot. Literally, it means the laws of, or the walking, literally it's walkings, halachot are walkings, how we walk in our life, right? But we take that to apply to Jewish law. The laws of deot, which is plural for knowledge. So what we're going to do tonight is we're going to question and understand, first of all, why does the Rambam call what he deals with here deot, which I haven't said what it is yet. Why is it deot? What is da'at? And what is the Rambam trying to do here? So this is essentially an introductory lesson. Next week will also be an introductory lesson. The following week we'll begin reading into the text. But we need to do introductions in order to be able to come into the milieu that's important to understand the world that we're supposed to be in when the Rambam is talking to us. So when the Rambam talks about de'ot, that is what you and I might be more familiar speaking of using the term midot. Midos. Yeah? I'm not doing that again, I'm just telling you. That's only to translate. Translate. And what we understand midot to be, right, literally means measures. Midot are measures. But when we use them simply that way, what we essentially are referring to are the attributes of a human being. And the ways in which a human being interacts with other people, with society, with oneself. That's what we generally are talking about when we say talk about a person's midot. The Rambam does not use that term here, even though it is what he is referring to in general. He decides to call them de'ot. De'ot comes from the word da'at, roughly translated into English as knowledge. We're going to find that in Hebrew, in Lashon HaKodesh, it means much more than that. It is very specific. So that's what we're going to explore tonight. Before we explore the meaning of the word, what I'd like to do is understand and offer to you why it is that I've chosen to do these halachot. Why am I offering you the study of the Rambam's Hilchot De'ot? I'm offering it to you because I believe that in general, we do not see these things, A, as Jewish law. We tend to see the questions of our interactions with each other, our attributes, our happiness, our anger, our dialogue with ourselves and one another, our capacity to take care of ourselves, to be healthy, to be concerned and compassionate, as good things, as positive suggestions, as beneficial ways to live our lives, indeed, ways in which God would approve and indeed want us to. But is it law? And what I'd like to present to you first tonight is yes, it is law. It is law, like Shabbat is law, like Kashrut is law, like any other mitzvah in the Torah is law. The Torah does not simply encourage us to be people of integrity. Does not simply encourage us to be people who are compassionate and empathetic. It commands us to be these people in the same way that it commands us all 613 mitzvot of the Torah. These are part of them. So Harambam is putting this out as law. Now, the thing about this law is that it's very difficult to get into particulars because we human beings are so complicated. We're very complicated. Our minds are complicated. Our psychology is complicated. We are complex. And so what we give over are principles of conduct, but the specifics are going to be very sensitive to the actual contexts within which we find ourselves. You can't write a textbook for the specifics. And we will get into that as we move into the sessions each week. We'll deal with the principles. But what I want to do with you first is I want to take a look at how not only the Rambam looks at this, but how everybody else looks at this. Because you know me, if you've been to a shiur of mine, I love quoting the Rambam. But when we're studying the Rambam, it's important to quote other people to be able to see how people saw what the Rambam is talking about. Those who came before him, those who come after him. So, why de'ot? Because de'ot is part of Torah law. But we don't generally treat it that way. We forget that it is that. And here's one more thing. It's not just that it's Torah law. It is paramount. It is paramount. It is because of our failure in de'ot, in midot, in our attributes, in our capacity to interact with each other meaningfully, carefully, compassionately, and appropriately, that we lost our Beit HaMikdash. The Hachamim don't say that we lost our Beit HaMikdash because we were having problems with Kashrut. We may have been having problems with Kashrut, but that's not the reason they tell us that we lost our Mikdash. The reason they tell us that we lost our Mikdash, that we lost Yerushalayim, that we were exiled, that we were massacred, is because we couldn't love each other appropriately. And that's a nice way of putting it. That's a British way of putting it. What it says is that we hated each other for no reason. No good reason. And so that is De'ot. It has everything to do with De'ot. And so I believe that it's important that we actually talk these things out and that we spend some time studying these things as Jewish law, not simply as suggestions of ways that we might better ourselves. That too. But it's more serious than that. I'm opening with the Netziv, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda of Berlin. He lived in the 19th century. He was the Rosh Yeshiva of Volozhin Yeshiva before it closed. And he writes, what we're going to read here is his introduction to his commentary on Torah. He wrote a commentary on Torah called the Ha'emek Davar. And he opens the book of Bereshit explaining why the Hachamim call Bereshit, Genesis, Sefer HaYashar, the book of the straight, literally, straight people. So he says, Yesh Lavin Hatam, this is number one. I'm sorry, there are a few entries here that I don't have translation for, but I'll translate for you. Baruch Ata Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nehyav Dvaro. Hold, fasten your seatbelts because the Netziv is a little bit, he's very blunt right here. The Netziv says, Yesh Lavin Hatam, Lama Kara Bil'am Et Avotenu B'Shem Yisharim. He says, we should understand why Bil'am, later in the story of Bnei Israel in the desert, who was hired by the king of Moab to curse the Jewish people, he calls us Yesharim. He calls us straight people. Specifically, the Hachamim say he's referring to our forefathers, Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. They were straight people, says Bilam. And he says, Tamot nafshi mot Yesharim. My soul should die a soul of the straight ones like them. Why does he refer to them as Yesharim, says the Netziv? He says that the reason is because God, it says, Ha'inyan d'nitba'er b'shirat ha'azinu, I'm 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 lines in, Al ha'pasuk ha'tzur tamim pa'olot tzadik ve'yashar hu. Speaking about God in the song or the poem of ha'azinu, it says that God himself is a straight God. And what does that mean? Shevach yashar hu ne'emar lehatzdik din HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He is called a straight God to refer to, in reference to, his capacity to judge. When he judges a straight judgment. And he destroyed the Mikdash. He destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, and his judgment was straight. Well, if his judgment was straight, what was going on that that Beit HaMikdash was taken down? So he says, it was a Dori Keshuf Taltol, which is the continuation of the Pasuk. It was a crooked generation. How was the generation crooked? Pirashnu Shehayu Tzadikim V'Hasidim V'Amalei Torah. He says, I've explained this to mean that in the generation that the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed, the people of that time were righteous, even saintly, and they engaged in Torah. What was the problem? Lo hayu yesharim. They weren't straight people. Halichot olamim. In what capacity? In their interactions with the world. In the way that they dealt with the world and others. In what way? Al ken mivnei sinat chinam shebelibam zeh hashdu et mi shirau shenoheg shelo kedaatam biirat Hashem shehu tzaduki v'apikoros. Because they did not have love in their heart, they hated each other. They would look at someone, hashdu. Hashdu means they would suspect. Everything was suspicion. Everybody was suspect. Hashdu et mi shirau shenoheg kelo da'atam. Who was suspect? Those who did things other than what they thought they should. Other than what they thought was right. So if they found people doing things other than what they thought was right, how did they treat them? Ketzedukiva pikoros, like heretics. So there was no patience for any of this. There was hatred that was bubbling. Ubau al yedei zeh lidei shfichut damim. And as a result of this, they came to murder. In whatever capacity. Bederech haflaga lechol haraot shebaolam. In horrible behaviors, the most extreme behaviors in the world. Ad sheharav habayit, to the point that the Beit HaMikdash, that the Holy Temple in Jerusalem was destroyed. And that was the righteous judgment of God. Why? HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yashar Hu. God's straight. En osofel tzadikim ka'elu. He doesn't suffer righteous people like that. that have their righteousness in terms of their Torah. They study a great deal, they do things, mitzvot, but they can't love another person. They have hatred in their hearts. They find people that do anything different than them as being essentially heretics. God doesn't suffer such tzaddikim. He suffers and loves and cares for those who engage in the world in a straight way. Their interactions with the world are straight. Velo ba'akmimut, and not crooked. Afal gav shu l'shem shamayim, even though they tell themselves that they're doing it for the sake of heaven. Zegorem churban abriyah, it causes a destruction of creation. Harisut yeshuv haaretz, it destroys civilization. That's what the Netziv is writing. And this, he says, was the great attribute of our forefathers. You look at our forefathers, Abraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, and he continues with each one of them. I didn't put the whole thing, I only put Abraham on here. And what he says about Abraham Avinu, shehitnahagu imumot haolam afilu ovdei lilim mechuarim. He says, look how they interacted with all the people of the world, even those who worshipped idols in an ugly way. Because of course they always saw the worship of idols as ugly. Mikol makom hayu imam be'ahava. Nonetheless, they treated them and acted with them out of love. Ve'hashu letovatam, they were concerned for their well-being and their good. Ba'asher hi kiyum ha-briyah, because that's how you uphold creation. With empathy, compassion, and love. Kemo she'anu rim kama hashtateh Avraham Avinu l'tpalel Sedom. All you have to do is take a look at how long Avraham Avinu spent praying for the welfare of Sodom and Gomorrah. So that's the Netziv. Speaking about the value of Deot and how central it is and serious it is in our lives. It warrants studying the Halachot. Listening to what the Rambam has to say in terms of his teaching for us. And he's one of the few who actually put this into halakha in the way that he did. The Rambam himself in the Moreh Nebuchim in number 2, he says, I just want you to know that there are things that we do that are for the good of all of humanity, our social situations and constructs, and good for us. He says, Hem asher maninu be'alichot deot, hilchot deot. I've written them already in hilchot deot. The Moreh Nebuchim he wrote at the end of his life. So he refers to the Mishneh Torah, and he says, I've written these things in Hilchot Deot. Kulam to'altam pshuta brura. He says, look, they're very simple. The purpose of these things, being nice to people, caring about our health. As the Ramchal writes in the opening of the Mesilah Yesharim, he says, look, everything that I'm writing you here, you know. I'm not giving any major chidushim. It's just that we don't pay attention to these things as though they are impertinent, incumbent on us, the things that we have to actually care about and keep. So the Rambam says it's very clear. Why? Because you realize that by doing these things and acting in this way, you create a functioning society, a thriving and a viable society. He says, so clear, I don't really have to elaborate on it. Everybody knows. Take a look at number 3. And before we read number 3, I want to point out, and we're going to come back to this at the end. This is not just about how we act with each other. This is about how we act with ourselves. And that is a fundamental principle. If I do not care for myself, if I do not love myself, if I do not sense the value of my own being, I cannot do it or recognize it in another person, no matter how much I try or tell myself that I am. And so I want to point that out, that that's not just some new wave idea. It's not just some new thing to be concerned about the self. Our Chachamim tell us it is part of Derech Eretz. Literally meaning the way of the earth. By the way, you've heard Derech Eretz Kadma LeTorah. You've heard that line? Anybody hear that line? Yeah, it doesn't exist. That line exists nowhere, except for later people who quote it where from nothing. The Hachamim never said Derech Eretz Kadma LeTorah. What they said was this. 26 dorot kadma Derech Eretz et haTorah. For 26 generations, the way of the earth preceded the Torah. What does that mean? For 26 generations, the way of the earth preceded Torah. The earth, human beings, humanity, developed themselves, their interactions, their lives, the viable modes in which they engage with each other for 26 generations. It became the way of the earth. To that, the Torah spoke. But until I had an integrated society, the mores, morals, general ethics of human beings, what it meant to be human and engaged in a relationship, the Torah didn't have a seat within which to respond and speak. It's to that that the Torah talks. And so 26 generations this develops. This is what we call Derech Eretz, the way that we engage with each other that is viable. Why do I say viable? Because if it wasn't viable, it didn't end up panning out. So we wait to see how it works. And it's there where the Torah picks up and says, I'm going to save you some of the trouble. But I'm going to refer to the things that you know. You know, buying, selling, borrowing, lending, children, parents, relationships, this kind of thing. You've all developed that. Now I can talk to you. And so now that it's developed, I'm going to help you do it in the best way that you can. But Derech Eretz, essentially the way of the earth, isn't just nice manners. It's the viable way of living with each other. So when we talk about Derech Eretz, I'm not just talking about the way that I act with another person. I have to begin the discussion of Derech Eretz with the understanding of how it is that I act with me. And so we're going to see that consistently. One of the people that put this out is Rav Yishaya Levi Horowitz. He wrote a very famous book called the Shnei Luchot HaBrit, simply referred to usually as the Shalah. We've heard of the Shalah? That's the Shnei Luchot HaBrit. He was a 16th century scholar, and he writes about Derech Eretz. And in Derech Eretz, he says, Inyan Derech Eretz hu hanhaga yishara. Derech Eretz is acting straight. Yeshara. Straight path. Tzniut yatara. It is reserve and modesty. Ma'alat amidot v'kol hamudot. It is the highest of our attributes. All desirable traits find their paths converge in Derech Eretz. V'liyot ohev lebriyot. One must love creatures. Why am I saying creatures? That's what it says. Briyot literally means those things that are created. Right? All creations, creatures, creatures. Ohev, ahuv mebriyot, you should be loved by them. Isha shalom v'isha shalem should be a man of peace, a human being of peace, and a human being that is whole. Shalom and shalem. Mahzik yum ha'olam, be concerned about holding the world intact with your personal interactions with it to whatever capacity that happens. Bichlalav, in general and in particular. General means general way that one engages in life. Particulars, who were you talking to today? Who did you interact with today? How did those manifest? How did you take care of yourself today? How are you holding? How do I know that that's what it is? He says it outright. There's three parts. See where it says Aleph Bet Gimel? Aleph, Derech Shlemut Hanhagat HaAdam Be'atzmo. First things first. Keep whole, make complete your actions with yourself. Take care, worry about your health, make sure you get enough sleep. Learn to smile. These things help. First things first, we can't even get out the front door in the morning until these things are running. Second thing, once we've got ourselves running more or less okay, Shlemut Hanagat Adam, Bebeto. Brilliant. What does that mean? We haven't even gotten out of the door in the morning. You woke up, have a nice time, look at yourself in the mirror, recognize what's good, beautiful. Now you got to go downstairs. And there's family. How are we going to act with them? See your kids in the morning getting ready for school if you're at the right time, right? Maybe they went before you, who knows? Maybe you're driving them to school. How's the interaction? Do we know what's going on with them this morning? Do we have any idea what exams await them, cruel exams await them in the school, right? Your wife, your husband, all of these things, this is where the next step takes us in terms of Derech Eretz. We don't have to leave the house. We get those running more or less okay, which takes our entire lives. Our entire lives! Then, Derech Shlemut Hanagat HaAdam Bezulato. How it is that we act with everybody else. So we have tremendous practice because you've got somebody that's with you in the mirror, first thing in the morning. We've got a whole bunch of people that are there in the house, maybe, you know, more or less, at one point in our lives, anyway. Then, you know, with all that practice, you can actually go out and, you know, shake someone's hand, look them in the eye, smile, nice firm handshake, you know. That's the shalah. That's what we're talking about. Deot. Rav Kook. Late 19th, earliest 20th century, first chief rabbi Ashkenazi of Eretz Yisrael before the state is established, lived here for a while, one of the most brilliant, brilliant minds in recent times. I hold Rav Kook is as close as they come in recent times to prophecy. When Rav Kook writes about what's going on in our times and what it is going to yield and what we need to think about and what we need to respond, you feel like you are talking to, reading a prophet's words, as though he saw it in his crystal ball, lehavdil. But as the Hachamim say, Hacham Adif Minavi, a wise man is greater than a prophet. They see with their own minds, not just what they're given, what they discover. Brilliant. Rav Kook writes, he wrote a massive amount of work. Huge, huge amount of work. One of the things that he writes is the Orot HaTshuva. He writes about Tshuva, repentance. The opening page, the opening paragraph of his book on repentance, take a look. Number 4. Et HaTshuva Anu Motzim B'Shlosh Ma'arachot. We find Tshuva to be separated in 3 parts. The first is the part that we call tiv'it, it's just natural. Natural life. I'm not going to look at the other two. You can look at them. He goes on to talk about natural. Natural is subparts to it. 2 subparts. Sub-elements. What are the sub-elements? Tshuva tiv'it gufanit. Tshuva tiv'it nafshit. There's natural tshuva that affects our physical lives. There's natural tshuva that affects our spiritual lives, our souls. We're not going to talk about souls. Listen to this, physical lives. First thing that he writes, can't get out the gate until this stuff is addressed. When we come to Kippur, Yom Kippur, and we consider tshuva, when we think of ourselves being chozer mitshuva, when we're sitting in slichot and thinking about our lives, says Rav Kook, the first thing we have to think about is, have I been to the gym lately? And what am I having for breakfast? Is it going to get me through the day appropriately? And he says, "Hagufanit sovevet et kol harverot neged chukei teva." The physical tshuva deals with all of the transgressions that we cross, that deal with our natural sustenance, our lives, that deal with natural law. What works and what doesn't. What clogs our arteries and what doesn't. Habusar v'Torah, appropriate ethics, and how Torah deals with the natural world. Hamkusharim im chukei teva, everything that's tied to natural law. What does the chocolate cake do to me? How much butter was in that croissant? These are questions that Rav Kook is saying one has to address in terms of their path towards Teshuvah. We cannot engage in any kind of full service of God, of my spiritual life, of ultimately emerging from anything beyond my physical being, if I'm not going to ask myself and address those questions. Rest assured, the Rambam has an entire chapter on croissants. An entire chapter. Croissant. I'm an American. You're going to have to deliver. I'm Sephardi. I don't speak like you. I'm an American. I don't speak like you. And yet you welcome me. I appreciate it. You get this? You see the emphasis? These are just recent. Should we look at the Talmud? Quickly, we're going to look at the Talmud. How did the Hachamim of the Talmud? Was this too new wave for them? Were they too old-fashioned for these things? Oh no. They are the most severe when it comes to these things. They pull no punches. They say, if we don't have these things down, we've got serious breakdown. To what degree? Well, I mean, God really doesn't like this stuff, according to Chazal. I mean, none of this slips. Minor, small little things, you know, like you smash a fly in front of somebody that gets disgusted from it. Oh yeah, we're going to be called on that one. Why are you acting that way that's causing that kind of feelings among other people? What do you mean? I didn't even know. You should have known. Don't do that. Number 7. You feel like crying? Rabbi Yochanan actually cried when he heard this. Rabbi Yochanan, ki matele haikra, when Rabbi Yochanan came to this particular verse in Ecclesiastes in Kohelet that said, ki et kol ma'aseh ha'eluhim yavi b'mishpat al kol ne'alam. God will call us on all things, even the concealed ones. Concealed ones? What's concealed ones? The stuff that I do privately in my room when nobody... No, that's not what we're talking about. No. It's the stuff that nobody pays attention to, that we do every day. Like what? Well, there's an argument between Rav and Shmuel, famous Rav and Shmuel in the Gemara, but Rav and Shmuel seem not to be that different in terms of their opinions in this particular case. They just have different ideas as to what's disgusting. Rav says... What is it? Excuse me. Shmuel says, Rav says, it's kahurek hina b'fnei chaveru v'nimasba. You smash a little lice in front of your friend, and you see like a little blood squat thing. Squat. That's not okay. People don't like that. I mean, you know, you and I may be very brazen and strong, and we can deal with 5-6 of those things a day, right? But not most people. Nobody wants to see that. Now you think you're a big warrior because you killed the lice or you killed the fly. Don't do it in front of people. Not something that needs to be done. Shmuel says, no, we're talking about other things. What are we talking about? Shmuel says, harak b'fnei chaveru. You spit in front of someone. Not at them. You're just in front of someone. What is this? I mean, where are we? I mean, are we human beings? Do we have sensitivities in our interactions with other people? We just go about our way doing what it is that we feel like we're doing. We could care less. It's really not nice, says Shmuel. Those are the things that we're saying you're going to have to end up answering for one day. Right? This is what we hear about all the time, of course. It's, you know, do you keep Shabbat? Do you spit in front of people? Do you eat kosher? And, I mean, have you killed a fly lately? You understand why they call this concealed now, yeah? It's still concealed. And that's the problem. Because when we think about what it means to follow Torah and mitzvot, we rarely, if ever, think about these things. But they're serious. When we want to know if somebody is following Torah and mitzvot, what's the question that we ask? Do they keep Shabbat? Do they keep kashrut? Do they pray? Do they go to synagogue? Do they embarrass people in public? Oh no, not that one. No. Right, not that one. Do they? No, that's not what I meant. Do they speak Lashon Hara? Do they use nicknames for people that are insulting and disparaging? We don't ask that question, and question whether a person is religious or not. But why not? It matters whether the person keeps Shabbat. It does. It's part of Torah. It is a covenant of our people. 3,000 years old. It matters what we eat. It's part of our covenant. What one wishes to do with that covenant and how one wishes to relate to that covenant is a different question. But it's there. It's part of the covenant. And so is all this other stuff. The difference is that this other stuff really causes serious destruction when it's not functioning well. And that's the consistent line that we see running through all of it. In sensitivity of time, I'm moving to my next section. You can look at these things as have the translations. One thing I will look, because it's a nice one. Look at number 10. Rabbi Yehuda ben Tibbon was the translator of the Rambam's Moreh Nevuchim. He was a contemporary of the Rambam. He actually writes to the Rambam and he says, listen, I want to translate your stuff. Can I talk to you about it? The Rambam says, I'm too busy to meet you. And he actually writes out his regular day, a day in the life of the Rambam. If you want to know what it was, the Rambam writes a letter back to Ibn Tibbon to tell him, look, I get up in the morning, I got to go to Cairo, I'm the doctor of the Sultan, I have to go through everything. If everybody's feeling well, it's a good day. I come back, I run a clinic, I've got to sit and see people. By the time the day is over, I'm lying on my couch, giving out prescriptions to people as they're coming in. I barely eat. Then I have some time to sleep. Goes through his whole thing, goes, look, you can come, it would be a bit, I can't see you. And if God forbid somebody's sick at the Sultan, I never come, I don't come home. I'm there all day. Ibn Tibbon did end up writing the first translation into Hebrew from Arabic of the Moreh Nevuchim. And here, this is a small excerpt of a very long last will and testament he writes for his son. And he says to his son, listen, if it's a choice between food and clothes, go for clothes. Look. He says, Bini kefi yecholtecha, as much as you can, kabed et asmecha ve'et betecha. Honor yourself and your household. Et banecha and your children. How? Bemalbushim hagunim. Nice clothes. Make sure they're dressed well. It's your responsibility. Ki en ra'ui la'adam lachto liyot malbusha pehutim. It is inappropriate that a person should wear clothing that is less than his own honor and proper appropriateness. Haser mebitnecha. Keep things from your stomach and put it towards your back. Meaning shirt off your back, put it right back. You may not agree with him, but this is his advice to his son. Right? 850 years ago. This is a serious thing. So, we understand that these things are important. Let's find the term and understand what it means. Da'at. Da'at. Why is the Rambam talking about these things with that word? What does that mean? So normally when I hear the word da'at, I simply think knowledge. But it's much more than that. And we're going to look at that. I'm going to start with the concrete and move from there. It's the best way. We use knowledge for many things. Even in English, we use it in the manner that we're going to see it used here. But that's only because it borrows from the Bible. English borrows this from the Bible. One of the most clear usages of the word da'at is when it is used first in the Torah. It's not the first time that it's used. It's used earlier than this in the Torah, but we find it in terms of this specific meaning here, in where we are simply told that Adam and Eve had intercourse. They were together. How are we told this in the Torah? Take a look at... Where are we? You telling me? 11? 12? Do I hear 13? No, I'm just kidding. 11. Ve'ha'adam yada et hava ishto. And the human knew his wife Hava. And she conceived. Vatar, vatilet kain, and she gave birth to Cain. So the word yada is a word that means connection. That's my presentation, my initial hypothesis. Now let's test that. Let's see if it holds up. Okay? We use this word to talk about many things in halakha, in Jewish law, in Torah. One of the ways that we use it is when we talk about a person's capacity to be aware of the world around them. So, for example, we will say that a child under the age of bar and bat mitzvah does not have da'at. The child has no da'at, doesn't have knowledge. Doesn't mean that the child doesn't know anything. It simply means that the child is limited in his or her capacity to sense fully what's going on in the world. This manifests halachically. Because a child has difficulty, the younger the more this is so, in interacting with others as others, rather than extensions of themselves. In other words, where a child is able to actually see somebody else and say, you are another, I'm me, I have to relate to you in your terms, as opposed to saying, I'm me and you're part of my world. And I will engage with you as I need to engage with you, which is what most children do. That is a lack of dot. It is an insensitivity to what's going on in the world around them. And so, we say that one should be very careful about the property that is given to a child. Why? The child cannot give it back. Legally, the child can't give it back. Child doesn't know how to transfer property. I used to see this in my house. It was the worst situation. Actually, my son is right here, over there. On Simchat Torah in Brooklyn, right, they would give the kids these candy bags, I mean, massive amounts of candy, right? And they'd all haul everything back to the house after Simchat Torah and do this massive trading ceremony. It was the worst thing in the world because nobody knows how to trade when they're 5 and 6 years old. There's no such thing as trading. This is just a nice game. And then all of a sudden you realize that everybody has your candy and you don't want that to go, you know, your sweets are going on walking off with your brother somewhere, and it's not what you signed up for. You thought it was a good idea at first, but it's not how it works. Anybody who's had any children play together in a house knows that this is the case. Yeah, you play with the toy and you think that this is now your toy, and you just walk home with the toy, and then one having a catastrophe tantrum, and the other one's going out, and you have the sharing is caring and the whole thing. It's a disaster. They can't understand the meaning of transferring property. So this manifests very interesting halachically. The first day of Sukkot, there is a mitzvah to take lulav and etrog, yes? The lulav on the first day of Sukkot must be owned by the person. It has to be your lulav. You can't borrow a lulav from somebody and fulfill the mitzvah. You can have one given to you as a gift, and they'll say, you're going to give it back, right? Yeah, fine, but it's given. Cannot fulfill the mitzvah if it's not owned by you. The Gemara, Rabbi Zera, says, don't give your lulav to a kid before you do the mitzvah. You can't get it back. Look, it's number 12. Amar Rabbi Zera, lo liknein ish hoshana liyunuka biyomat tava kama. Be careful, don't give your hoshana, meaning it's a term for the lulav and the etrog, your whole thing. Don't give it to a kid on the first day. My tama, why not? A kid can acquire. They have no problem taking things. That's not an issue. But they can't give it back to you. You end up using a lulav. It doesn't belong to you. It belongs to him. It's a problem. There's no dot. It's not just knowledge. It is knowledge that comes from the capacity to sense interaction, connectivity, how I interact and interplay with the world and people around me. That comes with age. When does it really kick in? Puberty. Which happens to be bar and bat mitzvah. Except that doesn't happen to be. It is. Bar mitzvah and bat mitzvah is puberty. Halachically, we assume that when a person reaches that age, a boy reaches the age of 13 and a girl reaches the age of 12, that they have hit puberty. And so therefore we assume that all is fine and well, and they're moving in, moving up, right? But it has to be the case in certain situations where we have to know that this is an adult, at least a legal adult, that is engaging in mitzvah. Why? Because if the human being, the boy or the girl, is still thinking in terms of self, as opposed to relating self to other, they can't do mitzvot. Well, what? They can perform actions that we call mitzvot. But it's not a mitzvah, because who are a mitzvot meant to be acts of love and relationship with? God. Kadosh Baruch Hu. So we need the person to be able to begin to at least have this sense of relationship before mitzvah can mean anything to them. They have to hit puberty. Of course, we've got a lot to learn from that point. It's just the beginnings. And it takes us for about 50, 60 years until we get something around the orbit of what we're supposed to be doing as far as relationships are concerned. But we start the bar mitzvah. And this is brought le'alacha, number 14. Haben Mishiva Leda Shia Ben Shlosre Shana, a boy, when he's born until he's 13 years old, Nikra Katan V'Nikra Tinok. He's a little kid, he's a suckling infant, for all intents and purposes. Afilu Hevi Kama Se'arot B'toch HaZman HaZeh, even though he may show extra maturation characteristics, secondary maturity characteristics, under that age, doesn't mean anything to us, he needs the years. But if it's vice versa, he's got the years, but doesn't show that he's gone into puberty, not, we wait. We don't actually wait to have the bar mitzvah. You have the bar mitzvah, that's fine. But legally, if there are questions with regards to law, and this person needs to actually be of age, then we have to know that the person is of age. But what happens at puberty is that we have, as human beings, we begin to acquire, psychologically, emotionally, biologically, the capacity to begin relating to others as others in our lives. Jean Piaget, who studied a great deal childhood development, children's development. He was a Swiss psychologist. He did a lot of work with children, and one of the things that he put with studying children, developing an entire corpus of understanding the development of children and the different stages of children's development. And one of the core elements of Piaget's studies and writings with regards to children is that they move from a state of being very self-aware, or at least self, I shouldn't say necessarily self-aware, but aware of the world in terms of themselves, to points in where they begin to recognize other and begin to learn how to relate to other. So this is a very small excerpt that he writes in Moral Judgment of the Child. When he's talking about children's play. And he says, little children, the younger they are, don't play as a mode of interaction with others. They play as a mode of personal stimulation. The child plays for himself. His interest does not in any way consist in competing with his companions and in binding himself by common rules, which is part of play. Binding oneself with others in terms of common rules, so as to see who will get the better of the others. It is essentially a motor pleasure. That's for him. We see in number 19 that when we talk about Bezalel is the man who is the constructor. He constructs the Mishkan, the tabernacle in the desert. But he doesn't just construct, he's the engineer of the Mishkan in the desert. He's simply told, build this. He's got to figure out how to build it. He doesn't get instructions as to how it is that he should build it. So God says, I've chosen Bezalel and I'm giving him the know-how in order to be able to do this. And that's in number 18. Amaleoto, I am filling him up, God says. Ruach Elohim, with the Spirit of God. Bechokhmah, bitbunah, dat, b'chol melacha, with chokhmah, with wisdom, with binah, with understanding, with dat, and all manner of melacha, and all manner of creative work. He'll know how to do it. Comes Rashi, and he says, well, let's understand these terms. Chokhmah, adam shomea me'acharim v'namad. Wisdom is when you learn information. You gather information, hear it from other things, read in book, you gather information. Binah, what is this understanding? Mevin davar melibo mitoch devarim shelamad. You begin to put things together. You get a whole bunch of information. You start to put two and two together and realize that there's a whole bunch of implications of the things that you just learned that nobody told you, but you discovered. You understand the meaning of the details of data that you have amassed and you learned. What is dat? What is knowledge? He skips right through and says, oh, that's Ruach HaKodesh. That's the Holy Spirit. That's God resting upon you. What does it have to do with everything we've said until now? It's God resting upon you that allows you to see reality as it is. You're not projecting your own ideas anymore onto a reality as you wish to see it. You are, as Einstein said, seeing what is and not what you wish there to be. And when one is working with God, one is seeing and sensing reality. There's an interconnection. There's a sensitivity in relationship to what's really happening. One connects to the world around them. That's dat. So that means And this is crazy, but that means that you can have somebody filled with wisdom, even with understanding, and yet lacking da'at. Yes? You can have a hacham, you can have a navon, you can have somebody who's wise and understanding and have no da'at. What does that mean? Hachamim talk about this. They don't know, we've got that. There are situations in where you have a Talmid Hacham, somebody who is genuinely a scholar, who has no sense of da'at, who does not sense how they should interact with all the wisdom that they have. Spent years studying, no idea how to administer the knowledge. No idea what's appropriate in terms of the interactions. You have a doctor who studies all of his time to be able to understand medicine, doesn't know how to write a prescription, cannot diagnose, and doesn't sense what's going on over here. I mean, is that why everybody loved House? How do you do this? Like, uncanny da'at. Everybody, you know, he doesn't have any of the da'at. But da'at in one capacity he had. Which is a problem, right? That's the whole point. How do you have this kind of da'at? Do you really have da'at if you have no da'at? And that's part of the whole issue, isn't it? So the Hachamim talk about such an entity, a Hacham that has no da'at. They're pretty serious about that. I mean, very serious about it. Take a look at number 20. Vayikra el Moshe, and God called to Moses. This, of course, is the opening line of the book of Leviticus, of the book of Vayikra. The calling, where Moses, you know what ends, you know where we end up in the last book, right? The cliffhanger in the last book. Shemot ends with a cliffhanger. It's the most dramatic cliffhanger practically in the whole Bible. They've built the tabernacle. It is all up and ready. The people are standing around and watching it on its first day. It has been consecrated. Everybody wants to know, is this thing going to work? Or isn't it? Will God come down and talk, or won't He? Is something going to happen here, or have we just spent a whole bunch of time building a tent? End of the book. Chazak v'nitchazek. See you next summer. That's what, right? Stay tuned for, you know, Shemot part. We open up with the following words. And God called to Moshe. Come in. Moshe is invited in. Well, why didn't he just go in? Oh, no, no, no. He's a hacham, but he has da'at. You don't just traipse into God's sanctum. You wait to be invited. Yeah, but you just built the whole thing. You went up to Mount Sinai. You got the Torah. You're speaking to God face to face. You're telling me that you don't just walk in, you don't have the key to the front door? I do have the key to the front door, but I wait to be invited. Take a look. It's beautiful. Mikan Amru, from this one line of invitation by God to Moses, the Hachamim learned the following idea. A Talmin Hacham She'en Bo Da'at, you find a wise man that has no da'at, no sensitivity of appropriateness and interaction. Nivela tova himeno. A dead carcass is better than him. This is the Hachamim talking. Why a dead carcass better than him? The dead carcass doesn't bother anyone. May not smell very good, but doesn't bother anyone. A Talmid Hacham that does not know how to interact with the rest of society is expressive of Torah. People relate Torah to this individual, and they find that the Torah has functionality problems. Not sensitive to what's going on in the world. And this is not easy. It sounds like an easy thing to do when you're a hacham. But it isn't. When one spends one's life studying, it isn't easy to take the study and implement it into human society. It sounds easier than it is. And that's what we find to be greatness. Greatness among Hachamim is their capacity for da'at. When you see someone like that, you are overwhelmed by the greatness of the person. I mean, I experienced this with Diane Ehrentroy. Diane Ehrentroy, as great as he is in Torah, he is great in his interactions. All one has to do is get to know him a bit. I thank God I had the merit of being able to work together with Diane Ehrentroy for over 3 years. As great as he is in his Torah, he is great in his humanity. He's stern. He draws the line when he has to. He stands the ground that he has to. But he's compassionate. He's human. Always. I don't know if you heard, recently there was a bit of a thing with me in the summer. And during this time, I spoke a great deal to Diane Ehrentroy. And after all of the discussions and this and how we're going to deal and what, he would say, and Rabbi Dweck, how's your Rebbetzin? That's a gadol. That's da'at. That's not chokhmah. That's da'at. And with all of the chokhmah, there's da'at. So the Hachamim say, Moshe, he didn't just walk right in. He didn't walk right in. Moshe! Aviya Nevi'im, the father of all prophets. Hotzi Yisrael Mimitzrayim, took us out of Egypt. Al Yadon Asa Kamisim, miracle worker. I mean, if there's one man that is able to walk into God's house when he pleases, it's this man. No. Vayikra el Moshe. He waited for the invitation. And from there we learn, Chochmah needs da'at. Needs knowledge in terms of sensitivity and experience. Knowing when, how, why, what, to say, do, speak. That in and of itself is humanity. And it's necessary in order for us to be able to seat our wisdom in a functional capacity. In a viable capacity. In a real capacity. And so the Hachamim say, if you find somebody without da'at, don't have mercy on them. Why? It's not going to help. They just don't get it. It's number 21. Amar Rabbi Elazar, kol adam shen bo de'ah, asur lerachem alav. If you find somebody who just does not get it, they've lost the plot, are not responding to what's being said, are not sensitive to what's needed. And this is important. I'm going to say this on the side, although this is central. The essence of this is that we do in our lives, or we choose to do in our lives, what is required, not what we wish. What is required of us in terms of the situation, what is required of us in terms of the people, not what we wish. We hope that we develop ourselves to the point that what we wish is what's required. It doesn't always work. But da'at is sensitive to what's required. And we act in terms of that. That is straight. That is yashar. These aren't open, do they? Does this bother you? Yeah? Just flag me down if you start chilling. You get some icicles on your... Okay? I'm sorry. Okay. So if that's da'at, when we say that we want to know someone, what are we saying? We don't just want their details, their contact information. What we're saying is we want to understand how it is that we interact with that person in a way that forms connection. When we say we want to know God, based on everything that we've said until now, what does that mean? I'm coming over here for a bit, I'm sorry. What does that mean? If we talk about the knowledge of God, we are not talking simply cerebral. We're not talking about show me the proofs for his existence. Those are important, but only for one reason. It helps us connect. Now, you don't always need to have proofs for his existence in order to connect. All you have to do is wake up and open your eyes and see that everything that you experience is an expression of his. That all that we live in this world, that all of the things that we experience in our everyday life is God pouring his heart out to us, asking us to know him through all of his expressions. So when we talk about knowing God, we are talking about much more than just simple belief and logical proof. What we're talking about is connection. And the question is, how do I connect? And we are asked to know Him. We are asked to know Him. And it is knowledge of God that is the central component of our involvement with Him. Take a look. Tehillim 91. God speaking here, so to speak. Right? It's David HaMelech writing, but on God's behalf. 91 is simply understood as we term it as the chapter of protection. Because it's in this chapter that God talks about protecting us. And He says, I will protect him. I will protect that one. I will lift him from all evils. Why? Ki bi hashak. Because he desires me. Vafaletehu, and I will keep him from danger. Ki yada shemi. Because he knows my name. The Rambam writes in the Morin Debuchim, notice here, he says, that it doesn't say that he simply fasted or that he prayed, which is part of it, and it's included. Notice that it says here, he knows my name. God is saying he knows me. I'm with him. God uses the same terms. HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses the same terms. Before King David dies, and he's talking to the future king of Israel, 12 years old. King Solomon was 12 years old when he ascended the throne. He reigned for 40 years. He died at the age of 52. King Solomon is a 12-year-old boy. He's concerned. This is why we have him praying to God after he assumes the throne and says, I need some help here, please. And his father, David, says to his son Solomon on his deathbed, Ve'ata Shelomo Beni, and you, my son Solomon, Da et Elohe Avicha Ve'ovdehu, know the God of your father and serve him. Know him. That doesn't mean get your logical proofs in order. It means connect. Make him your life. And he will make you his, so to speak. King Solomon takes that advice and he shares it with everyone in his writing of Proverbs. And he simply writes in the third chapter, Bechol derachecha da'ehu. In all of your paths, know him. Know him. Know his name. Know who we're talking about. V'hu yiyasher orchotecha. There you have the yashar again. He will straighten your path. It will be straight for you. Won't be all topsy-turvy and funny turns. God. Here we come close to what the Rambam was talking about, is talking about, writing about. Knowing. Number 25, God's talking. Who's he talking about? Abraham Avin, Abraham. And God says, Ki yada'tiv, I know him. People don't realize what that means. They just think, yeah, I know him. I got him down here on my sheet here, on my thing. It says, Abraham. I know him. I love this man. I know this man. And I know that he will teach his children and his grandchildren after him to keep my way. I know this man. That's what da'at means. I am connected to this man. I am intertwined with this man. I am interested in his life because he's interested in me. That is da'at. And so what we find is that when we talk about da'at, when we talk about knowing, We are talking about relationship and connection, sensitivity to the other, sensitivity to myself and what I'm dealing with and what I'm going through, what I need in order to be able to do what others need. That's Da'at. It's our entire lives. It's the first thing we pray for every single day in our Amidah, in our Shmona Esrei. First bracha, Ata honen le'adam Da'at. Can I please have some help with getting connected with my world, God? I could use some wisdom that'll help me. I could use some understanding that'll help me. Bottom line, I don't want to lose the plot. I want to engage. I want to know what's happening. There's a great Calvin and Hobbes cartoon. You know Calvin Hobbes? Come on, come on. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. It's my favorite. It's my favorite. Calvin and Hobbes. So there's this one, just one little cell, right, of Calvin, you know, the kid, you know, sitting there with this little, you know, word bubble on top of him. How old do you have to be until you know what's going on? It's Da'at. Old Calvin wants his Da'at because he plays around with this tiger who's a stuffed animal. But he's got a whole world going on. I mean, a whole world going on until it comes time to actually engage. The funny thing is, he knows a lot more what's going on than anybody really thinks. But he's a kid. We pray for it every day, three times a day. It is the first thing we ask for. Without it, we've got nothing. A carcass, dead carcass, is better than all of the wisdom in the world without the Da'at to connect with, to use it, to engage. It's the whole of our lives. The worst thing that one can do is steal it. And you can. You can steal someone's Da'at. You can take it from them. You can make it so that they can't use it even if they have it. You can steal things from them. We don't present reality as it is. We don't even give them a chance to be able to use their Da'at. It is prohibited to steal Da'at. Do you know that? It's prohibited. It's an Isur in the Torah. One may not steal another person's Da'at. One may not steal another person's capacity to properly engage and assess a reality. Take a look. 28. Asur le'adam le'anig asmo bedvrei halakot uvitui. You may not lead your life in a way that is sly, smooth talking. Lo yehad bebe ve'had belev. Don't be one thing in your mouth and another thing in your heart. Inside like the outside. Notice it doesn't say the opposite. Outside like the inside. It's dangerous. We don't want that. We know what's going on in there. At least, yeah. Ha'inyan shebalev hu adavar shebapeh. What you have in your heart should be the thing on our mouths. Asur lignov da'at ha'beriyot. It is prohibited to steal the Da'at of the creatures, of creations. Doesn't matter, Jewish, not Jewish. This is a human thing. It's a human thing. One may not take Da'at away from another human being. It's what it means to be human, you see? It's what it means to be human. Don't steal it. Be careful. Details are there. Number 29, number 30. And so ultimately, I'm with this, I will close. And I'm sorry about the heat. But see, this is the thing. This is one very good point and time to say air conditioning is a good thing for Britain. I'm just saying. As an American, I'm just saying. It is what it means to be human. Da'at is the very essence of our humanity. Without it, our hachamim go so far as to say one is not human without it. It's one of the reasons why the Hachamim say, dead carcass, better off. Losing the whole thing about what it is to be a human being. Without Da'at, one can't be human. Listen to Rav Nachman of Breslov. Rav Nachman of Breslov says, the Hachamim tell us that a rabbi with his student, when the rabbi teaches his student, it's as if he made the student. Ki'ilu asa'o. Rav Nachman says, that means, quite literally, he made him, even his physical being, says Rav Nachman. Take a look. Number 36.
Anybody who teaches his friend Torah, it's as if he made him. Or his friend's child Torah, it's as if he made him. It's as if he made the body of this child. Built this child. Without knowledge, the capacity to know how should I engage in this life, which essentially is what the Rav is teaching this Talmid, we can't call him a human being. Sounds harsh, doesn't it? But based on what we're talking about, we can understand what he means here. Our ability to interact. It is what coming of age means. When we say that one has come of age, we're not just saying that they happen to look older. When we say one has come of age, we are saying that one has gotten to a point in where they're starting to understand, oh, I can't just say what comes out of my head into my mouth. I have to say things in a way that you'll understand me. So I have to think about how will you hear me? And therefore choose my words in a way that will work for your thinking. The more I have capacity to do this, the more mature I am, and the more engaged in society and da'at I have, the more human I am. It is the definition of humanity. My ability to be able to sense beyond myself, to be able to look at myself from the outside, to be able to judge my interaction and involvement with the rest of the world and other people by looking at myself from the outside. No other animal on this planet can do it. No other animal on this planet can look at itself from the outside and consider its own life and its own interactions and its own position. We are the only ones. And that's our da'at that allows us to do that. When we don't use it, we essentially are giving up the major component of our humanity. This is not just Rav Nachman. The Rambam says this. We'll take a look quickly. Let's see which one I want to look at. Take a look at the last thing. Number 40. It cannot be that the ultimate goal of a human being is simply to eat, drink, build a house, procreate. These things happen in his life. They're not connected to him personally. And by the way, it's what he shares with every other animal. Haven't you seen birds' nests? Ant hole, ant farms? They build their homes. They get their food, they procreate. Welcome to the animal kingdom. That's not what makes a human. It's da'at. It is the knowledge. It is this sensitivity and connection. It's the self-awareness and understanding of my interaction that makes me human and separates me from every other animal on this planet. It allows me to grow from one step to the other. I'm done. Almost. Last two things. This is the entirety of Torah. I started saying it's very important. And I started saying it's very severe. What I'm telling you now at the end of this shiur is, it is the entirety of Torah. How do I know that? Again, it's not just me saying it. Rabbi Akiva says it. Rabbi Akiva says, "Ve'avta l'ra'acha kamocha, ze klal gadol b'torah." You love your neighbor as yourself, which starts, of course, with loving yourself. Being able to see in others the love and compassion that you have for yourself, that we have to try to achieve for ourselves. It is the major principle of the entire Torah. Where am I? Do I have it? Reb David? Yes, I have that. Number 39. Rabbi Akiva omer ve'avta l'ra'acha kamocha ze klal gadol b'torah shelo tomar hu'il v'nitbazeti itbazeh chaverai imi. One should never say, because I was insulted, I should insult my friends with me. Im asita kendalimi atame vaze bedmut Elohim asalto.
If one does this to another person, remember that you're doing this to someone that was said about them that they are created in the image of God. And so he's bringing it back to the sensitivity of, to whom am I doing this? Not just what do I feel like doing, and what is the appropriateness of it.
I'll tell you the last story, Hillel HaZaken, Hillel the Elder, he's sitting in his bed midrash, it's one of my favorite stories, and a person comes over, a Gentile, comes to him and says, I want to convert, on the condition, of course the Gentile is giving the condition over here, which is very strange, right? On the condition that you can teach me the entire Torah on one foot, meaning right now. Hillel says to him, not a problem.
What's hateful to you, don't do to other people. How filled with dot is that statement? What's hateful to me? How do I recognize that in another person? Do I recognize that they see it? They don't see it? Do I understand?
That's the whole Torah. He says, that's the whole Torah. Idach pirusha. Everything else that you will ever learn is commentary. Zilgmor. Now go learn. But that's your basis.
So that is our essence of dot. We are finishing with that here now. And we will continue next week in actually understanding how it is, what am I looking to interact with specifically, and how is it I model my life after that, Bezrat Hashem, next week. Do we have time for questions? Rafi's the boss.
It's late.
It is late.
One or two, but otherwise I think we should
go. Okay? Okay? One or two?
You can come and ask me afterwards.
You can come and ask me afterwards? Okay, come and ask me afterwards. Very good.